Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Inside Scoop Live. This is one of many features presented to you by Reader Views. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Hello, and thank you for tuning in. Today, I'm chatting with Michael Perrone about his book, A Time Before Me. But before we dive into his book, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Michael. He was born and grew up in Mississippi, where he received a B.A. in film from the University of Southern Mississippi and an M.F.A. in screenwriting from the University of New Orleans. During college, he was very busy with local gay activism. He held the offices of treasurer, vice president, and president for the Gay Student Alliance at USM and also served a term as treasurer for the Mississippi Gay and Lesbian Task Force. For a few years, Michael worked as a production assistant in television and film in both New Orleans and Los Angeles on such projects as the television series The Big Easy and the television movies Rag and Bone, Blue Moon, and Introducing Dorothy Dandridge. Following that, he worked for 2 years as the conference services coordinator for the National Association of Television Program Executives. Michael has also done script writing and analysis for the Los Angeles Independent Film Festival and the Los Angeles Film Collaborative. A screenplay he co-wrote with his friend Gina Bono, Millennium Babes from Mars, was optioned by an independent production company. Michael currently lives in Southern California, where he is employed as an adult education instructor and is hard at work on his next novel. He is the author of 3 novels, this one, A Time Before Me, another one, Starstruck, A Hollywood Saga, and his upcoming, Falling Into Me. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you with us. Now, as we get into this, tell us a little bit about the storyline of your novel, A Time Before Me.
It's a coming-of-age story set in the South, part in Mississippi, part in New Orleans. And it's about a young gay man coming to terms with who he is and sort of learning a lot of life's lessons that we all have to learn at that age.
Right, regardless of what our sexual preference is, huh?
Exactly.
Right. Well, also, while we're on this, what motivated you to write this A Time Before Me?
Most gay fiction and movies take place in urban areas. Usually it's New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles. And I sort of felt there wasn't a lot of gay fiction that was set in the South. So I sort of felt like my story and the people that I came out with, like, our story really hadn't been told very much. So that was the original idea for that. And then also I wanted to sort of give insight to people in other parts of the country about what it's like to live there and be gay there.
I gotcha. So with respect to that, how does A Time Before Me stand out from other gay coming-of-age stories?
Well, I think one of the big ones is the setting, especially the parts in the book that take place in rural Mississippi. You know, I grew up in Mississippi. I came out in Mississippi, and a lot of people are surprised by that I came out as much, you know, as openly as I did in Mississippi, and they're often like, you know, how was that? How did you survive? And I had a pretty encouraging experience coming out there.
Can you tell us a little bit about that without revealing too much of the story?
Sure. About me or the book?
Both.
All right. Well, as far as I'm concerned, I was blessed with the family that I have. Because
a very supportive, very, loving family.
I'm sorry?
A very loving and supportive family.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Very accepting. And so, of course, that made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then just being involved in activism like I was in Mississippi, it felt very important at the time because I felt like we were really doing an important job by educating other people. You know, when I was involved with the local gay activism on campus and then throughout the state, a lot of people that we would come in contact with at panels that we would do in classes, for example, had never even talked to a gay person.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's so many stereotypes that sometimes people have in their minds just because they've never known anyone
right.
who was gay. So that was very important to me.
And were your I'm sure you had both positive and negative experiences with that.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
But surprisingly, I actually had more positive than I did negative.
I'm glad to hear that.
And I think a lot of it, well, I think it, for most, when it comes to most prejudices, a lot of it is just lack of awareness. And once you have a face with the name or, you know, or you get to know someone who is gay, for example, personally, it sort of starts to change your maybe some stereotypes that you have.
Well, I know that's true in some cases, but there are so many biases out there. There are so many people who are still biased against race, color, let alone sexual preference.
Yes.
And it seems to have something to do with some ingrained fear. They're fearful of something. That provokes this flare up of antagonism, so to speak.
Yes, I totally agree, and
I'm not sure what they're afraid of.
I'm not either. I think part of it is fear of the unknown.
Yes.
I think another part of it is sometimes we try and find a group of people to sort of put all of society's problems on.
Oh, absolutely. Very well put.
So, yeah, for example, you know, if it wasn't for this group, everything would be okay.
Yeah, if it weren't for this group, minimum wage wouldn't be so low, jobs wouldn't be so hard to find. If it weren't for that group, jobs wouldn't be so hard to find and other things.
Exactly.
There is a lot of that. And that's just totally based in fear and a sense of lack, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And then with respect to sexual preferences, based on the unknown, fear of the unknown, you're so right about that. And isn't it interesting that here we are in the year 2007, and our country likes to pride itself on being so advanced and progressed in its thinking and its ways of viewing the world, and yet we still harbor such prejudices as recently as the ones that have just come out in the news this week.
Oh, I know. It's everything that's happened with the whole controversy with Grey's Anatomy,
mm-hmm.
and the cast and what's going on with there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sort of reminds us that, you know, that homophobia really is still alive.
Alive and well.
Even in Hollywood.
Oh, wow. Really?
And is being, you know, and is sort of still kind of accepted. I mean, if you watch movies or television, you can still see a lot of anti-gay slurs or jokes that are still allowed to happen, versus you would never see that in terms of like race or religious backgrounds.
No, with respect to race, it seems to be limited to older productions,
mm-hmm.
that were where in that day and age it was acceptable.
Right, exactly. So I'm hopeful that we'll get there one day.
Well, that's right. Life is a learning process. It's open school.
Exactly.
Well, Michael, now you wrote your book, A Time Before Me, in the first person. Tell us a little bit why you chose to do it that way.
I debated between doing first person or third person, and ultimately I went with first person because I thought it would give the reader a better insight to my main character, Mason.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of gives it a confessional type tone. One of the challenges with writing in first person, though, is that as a writer, you have to remember that everything in the book is being told from that character's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have our biases, and we all have, you know, our perspective on things. So that was something I really had to work on to make sure that that stayed consistent throughout the book to who the character was.
Right. Oh, I can only imagine. Now, A Time Before Me is your first book, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. And when did you write Starstruck?
Starstruck, you know, I was kind of working on it at the same time,
okay.
actually, on the side, because I had worked in Hollywood for a few years and everything, and I wanted to do something that was kind of tongue-in-cheek and kind of satirical, but also just a very fun read.
Oh, great, 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 great.
So that was the idea for Starstruck.
Okay, well, and we'll come back to Starstruck. In fact, we probably ought to have an interview on that book at some point in the future. Okay, well, but I was just wondering about the sequence here. So A Time Before Me and then Starstruck were written basically in concert with each other.
Yes.
And now you're coming out with Falling Into Me, which is basically, is that a sequel to A Time Before Me?
It is.
Okay.
Yes. It takes place, A Time Before Me takes place around between 1990 and 1992.
Okay.
And Falling Into Me takes place in 2004.
Oh, great, great.
So we kind of jump ahead and we see where this character is at the age of 30.
Ah, okay.
And sort of get his perspective on life and see how it has changed and how it's, in some ways, it's still the same from when he was 18.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Because now, with respect to A Time Before Me, it's a novel. It's a good read, entertaining. It's not horrifying in any way. No horrible endings in here.
No.
In fact, A Time Before Me is really, as you said, it's a coming of age story for a boy coming out with his sexual preference in life.
Yes.
And most of the negatives in there are predictable with respect to coming of age for any person, regardless of sexual preference issues.
Exactly. And lessons that we all have to learn.
That's right. That's right. Life's lessons. So, now, A Time Before Me is set in 1992, Mississippi and New Orleans. So, how is the gay community viewed now in the Deep South?
Oh, that's a good question. I have noticed a difference that it's slowly opening up more. New Orleans has always sort of been a live and let live kind of city.
Right.
There's always been a very strong gay presence there. In fact,
right.
The country's oldest gay bar is in New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
in the French Quarter. Once you go outside of New Orleans, it can be a different story. But I've noticed that even there, I just noticed that people's attitudes are slowly changing, and I think a lot of that has to do with education or I think the media plays a big part in that. I mean,
heightened awareness,
like Will and Grace, after Ellen and Rosie O'Donnell. I mean, people start becoming more aware of gay and lesbian issues, and they're starting to realize, for example, that it's some of the stereotypes that they may hold aren't true.
Good. Michael, you know, a thought just occurred to me. It is still, even today, it still appears to be very difficult for a person to want to go public with their sexual preference when that sexual preference doesn't fall into what perhaps many would perceive as a norm. And
mm-hmm.
That's just the way it appears to me to be.
Yes.
And yet we would hope that our country is more, well, not just our country but our world,
yeah,
is becoming more accepting of the fact that actually, for the most part, that's really not anyone else's business.
Exactly.
It's a personal thing.
Yeah.
And as such, it doesn't cast, I mean, just because people have different choices and are different, I mean, people are different.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if we would all sit down and take a look at it, every single solitary human being is different from the next.
Yes.
As much as at different times in our lives, especially when we're kids, we might want to be like somebody else or some other group of people, we really are unique and different.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the growing up process is really about coming to terms with our differences.
Yes. And accepting ourselves.
Embracing them. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Embracing them. And just because there are differences does not mean that we, I mean, we're not talking about psychological issues or characterizations that have been rendered on, like, sociopaths or people who simply are not able to make a distinction between right and wrong and then behave in those ways. We're not talking about that. We're talking about individual, unique differences that are neither right nor wrong, good nor bad. They just are.
Right, right. And one of the things that gets me is, in terms of exactly, we all have differences, you know? But I think the thing that all gets back to, and I think something that a lot of people sometimes forget or overlook, is I think that as different as we all are, I think we're still all more the same than different. because everybody wants to be loved. Everyone wants to be accepted. We all have those basic needs in life.
Oh, of course.
And sometimes I think people make a bigger deal out of the differences versus how we're alike.
Commonalities.
Exactly.
The common threads, the threads that run through all of us.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's exactly right. No, we're not uniquely different from in every way, just in some ways. I mean, we all have our unique characteristics.
Right, and that's what makes the world fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. If it were all the same thing, boy, I know this country would be bored in 2 seconds.
Oh, I know.
No, we're not talking about the basic needs that people have to be accepted and embraced and to want meaningful relationships and to want fulfilling careers.
Mm-hmm.
Those threads run through the core of everybody. In fact, I dare say I think part of that's just part of being, I call us children of God, children of a master creator,
right,
imbued with those fundamental desires.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, okay, now, Michael, your book is a coming-of-age book and, in effect, I guess sort of a coming-out book regarding a young boy coming to terms with his homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously your book would definitely appeal to many in that community. Now, what about the non-gay reader? What could they learn from reading your book?
Well, it's very interesting because I've actually gotten a lot of feedback from non-gay readers on the book, especially parents who have gay children.
Mm-hmm.
And my book was actually even chosen as a book club option for a group here in Los Angeles that was all women.
Ah.
All straight women, Jewish mothers. And so I went and I met with the group and everything, and there was probably about 25 of them.
That is wonderful.
And so, it gave them new insight into, a segment of society perhaps they didn't know a lot about. But again, as we've been saying, it also sort of just brought up the issue that we're all still kind of more or less the same, even mm-hmm. with our differences,
Mm-hmm.
But I've definitely had a lot of parents contact me too and say that the book has meant a lot to them and it's sort of given them insight also.
That's great. That is wonderful. I'm sure that is great.
Yeah, it's been wonderful to hear those comments, definitely.
Absolutely, because I know as a mother of an adult child, obviously one of the things that runs through many mothers' minds is, okay, how soon am I going to have grandkids?
Right.
And If their children are homosexual, then they're not necessarily going to. But then, of course, today with the artificial implantations
mm-hmm.
and things of that sort, it is very possible for a homosexual female to get pregnant and have a baby.
Oh yeah, very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And even by myself, I'm a really big advocate of adoption. And I plan to do that at some stage in my life.
Great. Because there are so many children that are in need of good, loving homes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I teach so many foster children in the public school district. And I think that when I do adopt, I want to adopt an older child just because I know how hard it is for those children to be placed. And so many of them are such great kids, and it's just, I can't imagine giving someone a greater gift than a family.
Oh, that is great. Well, I totally agree. In fact, I even at this stage in my life, I have grandchildren, and I do dabble in thoughts once in a while of becoming a foster parent or maybe even adopting myself, and I think I may have an opportunity to do something similar to that in the not-too-awfully-distant future.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Well, there are so many children who need... Raising children requires a community.
Yes.
And institutions are doing the best they can. They're not necessarily well-equipped to do a very effective job because they're dealing with so many. And so the more of us that can become willing to bring children into our homes and work with them and give them an opportunity to begin to feel that they're not just thrown away.
Right. That's so important. It really is.
And life circumstances can be so harsh, but that doesn't mean that children don't wind up feeling thrown away in spite of circumstances beyond their control and maybe even beyond the control of their own biological parents.
Yes, it's very true.
So I think that's wonderful. Well, Michael, tell us a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about now about the upcoming sequel, Falling Into Me.
Okay. Like I said, it's going to take place 12 years. Yes, 12 years later after the first book.
Mm-hmm.
The idea sort of came about when I was trying to figure out what book to write next. and I started thinking about it would be interesting to explore where my main character, Mason, was at the age of 30.
Because
I had turned 30 not too long before that, and I know that for me it was sort of, besides being a milestone birthday, it was sort of a point in my life where I really started rethinking.
It's the first of many.
Yeah. What are my goals? What am I doing? You know. And then I was also interested in seeing, you know, how has he changed since he was 18? You know, what has he learned? But also, you know, in what ways is he still the same? So, and I wrote the sequel in the first person also, so that was a little bit of a challenge because in the first book, you know, he has the voice of an 18-year-old.
Right.
And then in the second book, you know, he's been to college, he's moved to the other side of the country, so it's like, how has his voice changed since then? But then also, how has it stayed the same?
Well, yeah. that's true. I mean, life, this journey that we're on, each milestone that we achieve does add a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for here? Maturity, I suppose, to the way we approach things.
Exactly, and I have to say for myself that post 30 has been awesome.
Oh, good, wonderful.
I mean, it has been great. I think, and I heard that from so many of my friends who turned 30 before me. Because I was a little nervous, and like, oh, trust me, it's going to be great. Because once you're 30, you start caring less about what other people think. You're more sure about who you are.
Right.
And it's so, at least for myself, it was so true.
Well, that is true. That is a universal truism, truly.
In your 20s, you're still trying to figure so much out about who you are and what you want to do.
Oh, of course. And now I don't want to burst any bubbles here, but this is just one of many important milestones to come. You know, life is one of those things that I've come to understand where you don't reach a plateau that's pleasant and comfortable and you get to rest there and enjoy that for the rest of your life.
Continuous learning experience.
That's it. That's absolutely it. And some of those experiences will be, I don't know, they'll feel like they drag on forever. And then others, and then you'll reach some knowing, some understanding that's even more profound and more powerful than the ones you've learned up to that point in time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, well, I want to congratulate you on your journey. I want to thank you for your writing and the continued writing. And we are just about to run out of time here, Michael. So as we wrap things up here, tell the audience where they can go to buy your books.
It's available from most online book retailers.
Like Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble.
Exactly.
Great.
And then quite a few bookstores are having it in stock now.
Wonderful.
And then you can also visit my website, which is MichaelHPerrone.com.
And that's MichaelH.
H and then PerrOnne.
Perrone. .com.
That's it.
Wonderful. And I want everyone out there to know that this interview, as well as the reviews and a written interview, are all posted to Michael's page on InsideScoopLive.com and another one of our websites, ReadReviews.com, and Michael's website, MichaelHPerrone.com, will all have links to this interview. So I want to encourage everyone out there to take a look and take a listen and consider purchasing this book for your own library, for a friend that you know would really benefit from reading the book, and as well as for anyone you can think of that could really enjoy this book. So, Michael, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It's been great.
And audience, thank you for tuning in to this segment of Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host again, Gail Campbell. Until the next time, bye.